lectern and face this way, please. Who is feeling good about doing some reading? Ordinarily, I just put this all off on Alex, but I thought we'd give somebody else a chance. Penny?
Sure.
All right. Now, I have two readings, so we could have Penny read all of it. Cameron, you'll read the other one?
Sure.
Would you drop this one off with Cameron, or vice versa? These are the readings that I was talking about earlier today, and I also emailed them to the registration office, so if anybody wants to have them, I really encourage you to. I noticed that they were deeply meaningful. The last time I brought them, you notice everybody who received them kind of went.
I'm not sure we all got individual copies.
That was
I got.
I got a hard copy.
Yours never made it out of the room, clearly. So anyway, I find them both extremely helpful and, I mean, to me, practice is captured in these two little documents. So just a suggestion. Then I'm going to ask you to talk about what you did with your homework for our people who are just arriving tonight. So, okay, go ahead, Penny. Thank you.
In the world, when people call someone simple, they usually mean a foolish, ignorant, credulous person. But real simplicity, so far from being foolish, is almost sublime. All good people like and admire it, are conscious of sinning against it, observe it in others and know what it involves, and yet they could not precisely define it. I should say that simplicity is an uprightness of soul which prevents self-consciousness.
Okay, stop right there. Can we just take that in? An uprightness of soul that prevents self-consciousness.
Okay. It is not the same as sincerity, which is a much humbler virtue. Many people are sincere who are not simple. They say nothing but what they believe to be true and do not aim at appearing anything but what they are. But they are forever thinking about themselves.
Stop right there. Okay, they are forever thinking about themselves.
Okay. Weighing their every word and thought and dwelling upon themselves in apprehension of having done too much or too little.
Anybody recognize that? Okay, all right, here we go.
These people are sincere, but they are not simple. They are not at their ease with others, nor others with them. There is nothing easy, frank, unrestrained, or natural about them. One feels that one would like less admirable people better.
Who were not so stiff.
To be absorbed in the world around and never turn a thought within, as is the blind condition of some who are carried away by what is pleasant and tangible, is one extreme as opposed to simplicity. And to be self-absorbed in all matters, whether it be duty to God or man, is the other extreme, which makes a person wise in their own conceit, reserved, self-conscious, uneasy at the least thing which disturbs their inward self-complacency.
Yeah? Are we there? So I'm doing it all right. So it really doesn't matter what goes on with all of you. In fact, I actually technically don't know that you're here because I'm so busy making sure that I'm meeting my standards.
Such false wisdom, in spite of its solemnity, is hardly less vain and foolish than the folly of those who plunge headlong into worldly pleasures. The one is intoxicated by their outward surroundings, the other by what they believe themselves to be doing inwardly. But both are in a state of intoxication, and the last is a worse state than the first, because it seems to be wise, though it is not really, and so people do not try to be cured. Real simplicity lies in a French phrase, which I don't know about. Just
et juste milieu.
Thank you. Your simplicity lies in et juste milieu.
Don't you think? Is that close?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I said that about 8 times before I got it right in the recorder. I was so proud. I was watching carefully to see whether I was doing it correctly or not. In a very self-conscious way, because, of course, only I was ever going to listen to it, but it still needed to meet my French standards. My 3 years of high school French.
And what does it mean?
Hmm?
And what does it mean?
Et juste milieu. It means something like well, a balanced circumstance. Would that be
the right environment?
Yeah,
I'm sure.
Come on, Jen.
I just wanted to see if I wrote it.
No.
So gracious, really. So gracious.
I'm sure it could be clear in context.
Yes. Yes.
Real simplicity lies in a juste milieu, equally free from thoughtlessness and affectation, in which the soul is not overwhelmed by externals so as to be unable to reflect, nor yet given up to the endless refinements which self-consciousness induces. That soul which looks where it is going without losing time arguing over every step or looking back perpetually possesses true simplicity. Mm-hmm. Such simplicity is indeed a great treasure. How shall we attain to it?
Don't you love it? He doesn't just leave you there. But isn't this a great thing? He's going to tell us how to get there.
The first step, then, is for the soul to put away outward things and look within so as to know its own real interest. So far, all is right and natural. Thus much is only a wise self-love, which seeks to avoid the intoxication of the world.
He's writing this, you know, in the 1600s, so he's...
In the next step, the soul must add the contemplation of God, which it fears, to that of self. This is a faint approach to the real wisdom, but the soul is still greatly self-absorbed. It is not satisfied with fearing God. It wants to be certain that it does fear God, and fears lest it fear God not, going round in a perpetual circle of self-consciousness. All this restless dwelling on self is very far from the peace and freedom of real compassion.
Now, are people tracking this?
Yeah.
So all of this, am I doing it right? Am I doing it wrong? Oh my God, what do I... Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. It's just feeding the ego. That's all. No matter how much we would like to let that voice convince us that this is a good person way to approach spiritual practice, it is simply self-absorbed.
All this restless dwelling on self is very far from the peace and freedom of real compassion. But that is yet in the distance. The soul must needs go through a season of trial. And were it suddenly plunged into a state of rest, it would not know how to use it. The third step is that, ceasing from restless self-contemplation, the soul begins to dwell upon God instead, and by degrees forgets itself in God. It becomes full of God, and ceases to feed upon self. Such a soul is not blinded to its own faults or indifferent to its own errors. It is more conscious of them than ever, and increased light shows them in plainer form. But this self-knowledge comes from God, and therefore it is not restless or uneasy.
You with it on that last one?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we see more clearly than ever what we're doing, and how often and how far we miss the mark. But the information comes to us in such a gentle way that it's just helpful, mm-hmm. not hurtful. Yeah. Thank you. Anything about that before we... Yeah, Dave.
A state of rest. Oh, my. That just stood out of all that. That's just really stood out.
Mm-hmm. You know, we talk about... We're so far out of center here. Very often we go that far out of center there before. It's kind of like a, you know, a pendulum, and it's just slowly coming to rest. To be patient with ourselves as we go through that process.
Yeah, well, it's good to know that that's what's happening. Because I can feel myself over time settling to towards a state of rest, but I'm still going back and forth. But just knowing, okay, that's I can't remember how he said it, but a period of trial or whatever. Mm-hmm. But that's just a period of trial to prepare me to be able to remain productively in that state of rest.
Yeah, because if suddenly you were just dropped into it, you wouldn't know what to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
So we're kind of wearing away all the rough edges so that we can fit and set.
Just be there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, Jan?
Well, this is obviously somebody who's had a lot of experience. I mean, that's what I appreciate so much about it is the generosity of sharing. It's sort of like what the Buddha, you know, just here are the specifics.
Mm-hmm.
And so we can, it's something to turn to. I mean, it's something to turn to. And I mean, I remember we had a discussion in our facilitator group on Thursdays in Palo Alto. And I had the gift of having the experience of total relaxation while facilitating. The first time, I mean, and I shared, we were talking about facilitation, and I shared that and I thought, it took me, I've had
yes.
a little experience.
Yes.
Now I know what people are pointing to.
Yes. And it's not that I use that to compare and judge myself.
Right, because there's
no
point.
It's that I know where I'm going.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right, because it's doing just the opposite by trying to.
Both of these readings come from the Perennial Philosophy and by Aldous Huxley, which I would highly recommend. Jen, are you reading it now?
Mm-hmm.
And Dave, or somebody else is reading it. Is one of the monks another one? It is truly remarkable, and what Huxley did in this is draw upon spiritual spirit experiences from all times and all traditions, and then to use what people had to say on all of these different subjects, and it's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
It's truly beautiful, and this fellow is one of my all time favorites. I'm now in the process of finding out if what he wrote back in the 1600s has all been translated into English, or if I'm going to have to learn French. Read what he has to say, but it's Fenelon.
Fenelon.
Yeah.
And that's the name of the person who wrote.
Yes.
It?
Yeah, he's like Bishop Mohammed.
And when did the book get written? What year?
He was writing in the 1600s, but Aldous Huxley wrote the Perennial Philosophy, I think, in 1945.
Perennial philosophy.
Yeah. Well, another favorite of mine, I mean, maybe Christians know him, but I had never heard of him. His name is William Law. And he's just over the top, brilliant. Okay. Cameron. Oh, go ahead. Make your notes.
Law, W-A-H?
Law? No,
oh,
just
law.
Law. Just like the law. William Law. And he was, I think, maybe the 1700s, something like that.
Is he in that same book?
Yeah. I mean, he quotes, you know, just truly from all over the world to make his point. So he'll do a section on grace, and it's just everybody. And then in between is you get Aldous Huxley, who is right up there with the rest of them. He's pulling it all together for us, and then using these other people as examples. It's just, it's a brilliant, I mean, I think, I can't imagine anybody in this room would not love reading that book.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Animal grace comes when we are living in full accord with our own nature on the biological level, not abusing our bodies by excess, not interfering with the workings of our indwelling animal intelligence by conscious cravings and aversions, but living wholesomely and laying ourselves open to the virtue of the, this is the quote, virtue of the sun and the spirit of the air, unquote. The reward being thus in harmony with the Tao in the physical and physiological aspects is a sense of well-being and awareness of life as good, not for any reason, but just because it is life. There is no question when we are in a condition of animal grace, for in this state there is no distinction between the reasons for living and life itself. Life, like virtue, is then its own reward. It reminds me of Christian, the guy you're punished by you're rewarded
by what you do, not because of what you do.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. But of course, the fullness of animal grace is reserved for animals. Man's nature is such that he must live a self-conscious life in time, not in a blissful subrational eternity on the hither side of good and evil.
Doesn't that make you think of the dogs in a whole new living out there on the hither side?
Consequently, animal grace is something that he knows only spasmodically in an occasional holiday from self-consciousness.
And when you think about times that you have really enjoyed life, isn't that what is, that's what's missing, is the self-consciousness that puts me and that little self-scrutiny aside, and you're just there. That's why we want to go to the beach, right?
Okay, I stopped in the middle of a sentence, so I'm going to start at the beginning so I can... Consequently, animal grace is something that he knows only spasmodically in an occasional holiday from self-consciousness or as an accompaniment to other states in which life is not its own reward but has to be lived for a reason outside itself. Spiritual grace cannot be received continuously or in its fullness except by those who have willed away their self-will to the point of being able truthfully to say, quote, not I, but God in me, unquote. There are, however, few people so irremediably self-condemned to imprisonment within their own personality as to be wholly incapable of receiving the graces which are from instant to instant being offered to every soul.
Did people take that in?
It was a lot of hard words to say.
I don't know if you were here when I told that story about Aldous Huxley was hired by Disney for a while, and he fired him because he said, I can only understand about every tenth word the guy says.
Did she read that last sentence again?
Yeah. There are, however, few people so irremediably self-condemned to imprisonment within their own personality as to be wholly incapable of receiving the graces which are from instant to instant being offered to every soul.
So, there it is. We talk about that all the time. Right? Every second of life, we are just being showered with goodness. And yet, we can get so like this with, am I doing it right? Am I doing it wrong? Am I doing it right? That we miss the whole thing. However, he encourages us that there are very few of us who are so totally lost in that periodically we don't get some little hint that life is better than what we're trying to make it.
By fits and starts, most of us contrive to forget, if only partially, our preoccupation with I, me, mine, and so become capable of receiving, if only partially, the graces which, in that moment, are being offered us. Spiritual grace originates from the divine ground of all being, and it is given for the purpose of helping humans to achieve our final end, which is to return out of time and selfhood to that ground. It resembles animal grace in being derived from a source wholly other than our own self-conscious human selves. Indeed, it is the same thing as animal grace, but manifesting itself on a higher level of the ascending spiral that leads from matter to the absolute. Absolute is capital A. The end of it, shall I go on or?
Oh, yes, okay. Please, you're just getting to the good part.
The individualized will and the superficial intelligence are to be used for the purpose of recapturing the old animal relation to Tao, but on a higher spiritual level. The goal is perpetual inspiration from sources beyond the personal self, and the means are human kindness and morality, unquote, leading to the clarity, which is intuitive knowledge of the Tao as at once the ground and logos. All the sense.
Okay. Did people follow that last paragraph? Or would you like to hear it again?
Yeah, it's hard to say, too.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Okay.
So, just to set the stage, that he has described this state of being on the hither side of duality, okay, where animals live all the time, naturally, because they can't experience themselves as separate from life, and they don't have that I, me, mine, me subject, you all object, okay? And so what he's describing is what's available to us with what we're doing, which is to capture that state, to use our, what is it called, superficial intelligence?
I'm on the left here, right? Individual will and the superficial intelligence.
Yes, yeah. Our individual will and our superficial intelligence are the method that we use, okay, and the way we do that is through human kindness and morality. Okay? And that's how we take advantage of the opportunity that it is to, as a human being, to move into that state of grace consciously. Mm-hmm. Not because we don't have a choice, because we don't have a mind that will enable us to experience. I mean, you know, the animal, the dog, is having a lovely time most of the time, but it doesn't know it's having a lovely time. Okay, we are most of the time having a miserable time, and we know that we're having a miserable time. And what we can do is use our superficial intelligence and our individual will to go beyond that state of ignorance and delusion. And the way we're going to do that is by practicing human kindness and morality. Okay, so let's have it one more time.
The translation. The individualized will and the superficial intelligence are to be used for the purpose of recapturing the old animal relation to the Tao, but on a higher spiritual level. The goal is perpetual inspiration from sources beyond the personal self.
Don't you love that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That is that practice?
Yeah.
That is practice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the means are, quote, human kindness and morality, unquote, leading to the clarity, which is the intuitive knowledge of Tao, as at once the ground and logos.
It's the unitive knowledge. Is that actually the word? It's
unitive,
the unitive
knowledge. Yeah.
So it's that oneness. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So it's the ground, which is, and then logos, isn't that a word for intelligence? Mm-hmm. Or
well, it's the word of God, essentially. Is it? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, living in inspiration, using that to inspire us toward human kindness, toward living in for our practice in keeping with the precepts, we go beyond the illusion of a separate self and return to the ground that animates us.
Which is what I think he said that happens when you die, but this is
Oh, he's yeah. It's dying in each moment. Mm-hmm. It's the person who can truly say what he was referring to earlier, not I, but God in me.
Well, it feels so apropos. You know how everything is very woo-woo and everything just kind of happens perfectly? With that reading about the animal state, the animal race, I've been... one of the things that's been going through my mind recently is that those lines from Mary Oliver's poem, The Wild Geese, you don't have to be good, you don't have to crawl through the miles for 100... on your knees for 100 miles through the desert repenting. The only thing you have to do is let the wild animal of your body love what it loves. And just looking at how challenging that is, how simple that is, and how challenging that is. Because what it requires is getting underneath, or I'm not exactly sure how to describe it, but getting beyond or underneath that. The way I was looking at it is the conditioning, or like a particular enya-type conditioning, or whatever conditioning.
Yeah. The endless...
Yeah. Yeah. So how can I know what that... animal body, what it loves, because I've been so conditioned away from that.
And in fact, that is exactly what we're conditioned away from.
Yeah.
Right? A small child is like an animal. It's just there, responding to life, animated by life and responding to life. And we've got to.
And I've been looking at how all the incredible subtle beliefs around what's right and wrong and good and bad, and that's what keeps me from that.
It's what keeps that conversation alive, which is the first reading, that endless self consciousness. And so all the attention is going to that. And there's very little left over for being present to what's here.
Yeah, I love that description. I don't even remember exactly how I said it. The animal grace, is that what we're talking about? It's just a wonderful way.
And it's why we love small children and animals, because they are living in that state that we know is possible for us, and we are so far removed from because of that, of maintaining vigilance. On that self-consciousness.
Well, and the thing that just gets me, and it's one of those things where, I know that, and then I look at it again, and I go, it still gets me, is how incredibly subtle and unconscious the levels of those beliefs are.
Yes. Yeah. That's why we always talk about beliefs and assumptions. We can, after a while, uncover the beliefs. The assumptions, way harder, because we don't even know that there's something there to look for. We don't even know what it is that is framing the discussion. We're only permitted to look in certain directions, and we don't know that we're being restricted. Now, would you tell people, any of you who did your homework today, what did you do? We're going to let our neighbors in on what's been going on around here. Yeah, Rebecca.
You want me to just kind of describe it?
Yeah, describe what you did, what happened, what you saw, who was there.
Okay. I made a list. I made four different, maybe five different categories. Of mind, body, spirit, or practice, and then other. And then I put my relationships and just any other goodie that kind of came to mind. And I sat with that and looked to see what would be fun, what would be supportive, what would be life-giving in those different areas that I wanted to make the intention to direct my energy to, and I do it month by month. So for me, it was for the month of November. And then I went through and I wrote those down. And then I noticed that a few little things crept on the list that were like to-dos, you know? Mm-hmm. So I went back after I seemed to be done writing, and I kind of checked in for the fun factor, you know, to see, made sure that there was some little part of me that was excited about that and felt good about it. And there were a few that weren't, and I just crossed those off the list.
Uh-huh. Because nobody really wanted to commit to that. No. Somebody just had it as a should.
Oh, yeah.
Or it was just from conditioned mind.
Yeah, it was definitely from conditioned mind that just tried to spoil, you know, kind of get it on, spoil the fun. And then, after that list was done, I kind of made the how I'm going to remember, this was kind of the fifth list, and it was how this was going to happen. So I was going to record it, I'm going to listen to it, and, you know, I made that commitment as well. So, and the best indication was when it was all said and done, when I was done with the exercise, I felt very excited, and that was kind of my litmus test with was this a go? Was this plan a go?
Uh-huh. All right. Good. Anybody else? Yeah.
Well, I really enjoyed it. I'm kind of a list maker anyway. And so it's interesting. No to-dos crept in. I just kind of scanned. I didn't put any to-dos in. But I really just, I didn't pick categories. I just started randomly putting stuff down just as it occurred to me. So, you know, riding my bike was right in there with, you know, not damaging the Dharma. It was just all mixed up. And,
Riding my bike and not damaging the
Dharma. But they were things that I, you know, wanted in my life.
Yeah.
And what happened after that was, and I felt like I could just, that would be the end of the retreat. I could just stay in my hermitage and keep going. But I just said, okay, I'll get back to this. And then what I did is when I came to dinner, I just started filling my space with those. You know, I kind of, you know, did, you know, a little recitation before I ate, and then I just started with I choose, and it just, and there was some, I mean, there was stuff that wasn't even on my list, but good stuff.
Yeah. So. It just starts to flow, doesn't
yeah.
it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so mm-hmm. it's likable.
Now, people who were not here for the description, if this is not making sense, let us know. It's not making sense?
It sounds really good, and I'd love to go home and do it, but I had no idea.
What the heck we're talking about? Okay, so who would describe what... Yeah, Michael.
We're recording in our own voice into some kind of audio recording device. Things that we consciously want to remind ourselves that we know are important to us and that sometimes we forget. And it's a conscious reminder from our own mentor in our own voice about what's important to us.
Yeah. So if you had a practice coach, a life coach, just walking around next to you, reminding you what's important to you and what you value and what you want to focus on, what you want to give your attention to, what you want to remember, what you want to avoid if you wanted to go in that direction. And it becomes a replacement for the just me going around conversation that many folks perhaps recognize when I describe it that way. Yeah. Yes, Michael.
I've been listening to, I made one, and I've been listening to it almost every day for, I'd say, a couple months. And though I have no way of proving it, I think it is really, really having a profound effect on me. And what I put on it is some of the things are awarenesses I've had.
Yes.
And like, for instance, I was I heard a voice saying something to the effect of, I wish this were different, and it was referring to my life. and And I just identified from it, and in that moment it was like, there's nothing wrong with this moment. And the very last thing on my tape is, I wish this were different is a lie. I wish this were different is conditioning. Mm-hmm. Everything is okay right now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the first time I heard it, I heard, I wish this were different. And, you know, I listened to Reassurances, tape two, and it could be a reassurance. Like, I wish this wasn't so hard for you, you know. Mm-hmm. And then the next thing is a lie. It just startled me. And I was just like, and what it was like having you, like having you. And because that's what I project you do. You go,
you all that?
No, that's. So I love it. I love it. So
that to me, that is such a perfect example of how this can really benefit us, because well, Rebecca said it something similar earlier. You know, I've said that to myself thousands of times. And then to realize, whoa, that's a really not a good message to be giving. And yet, it just goes through. I say it, I believe it, I accept it. And we don't realize what a profound impact that kind of message is having. It's a strong brainwashing message that's going through regularly. And so to acknowledge, that's a lie. I hear that voice often, and it says da 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 da, and it's not true. And I commit to not believing that. I am not going to live from that place any longer. What I know to be true is, and then give myself that information, and to begin to hear that over and over and over and over. Yeah, because we all know that what conditioning does, you have an awareness like that, and then it just starts to close over it. And many people will report that it's months, maybe years later, that you have that same awareness again and go, oh my God. Well, we don't have to do that. Because if we are reminding ourselves of what is so, all of that time in between, we tend not to lose track of the awarenesses that we have. And it's such a powerful tool that conditioned mind has, that it is able to distract us and get us to forget what we remember, so that it can just close back in again and give those same messages and be talking to somebody who's going to believe those messages. Yeah. So talking to somebody, giving those messages, and talking to somebody who will believe what is true is really powerful. Was there more?
Well, you said it all.
Oh, good.
I mean, you know, it's just a thing of it's really helpful and it's really good. And
it is. I'm excited.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it is really a powerful tool for awareness. Yeah, Lori and then Cameron.
So with all of that, what's been said already, and then putting into all, this also the mentor who is just so right there to support me. So it was just kind of interspersed in there. I loved writing this. Whoa, this is really, I want to hear all of this.
Yes.
And more. I've only got four pages so far. And
yeah.
But I mean, just it could be an hour, you know, whatever it is. And So my question, another part of this, though, is what kind of a listening device? I'm just curious about what kind of listening devices people have that they like.
Well, I have a tiny digital recorder. Well, in fact, I gave one here. Are you guys using it? Is it? What's in the middle of the room? That's not a tiny. That's a massive dinosaur of recording equipment. Anyway, it's tiny, and you know, it'll fit anywhere in your pocket or whatever. It has different tracks, so mine has different things recorded on different tracks, and
This is pretty simple. It's not.
It's pretty simple as soon as you learn it.
and
you can put it into your computer and download it in case, you know, and you can, like that, manipulate it.
Just a little thing that I can record into and listen to. And then, do you have to have batteries with it? Mm-hmm. I know this is very
one little AAA.
Yeah. Okay,
so yeah, you can have your headphones, or you can listen to it. Just Radio Shack. I got mine. I don't know. Michael.
A lot of the new phones, like iPhone, will have some kind of software for recording. Also, there's great software for your computer called Quick Voice, which actually somebody called into the radio show mentioned, which is really great for Macs and PCs. I think it's $10 or $15.
Yeah, the thing I like about the device is that, and I would encourage you people always to have one. I mean, truly, nobody should ever come on retreat without a recording device. Mm-hmm. But if you have it with you all the time, when something happens, you know, and I can record on my iPhone, but it's not the same. But I don't know. Do you have a program, an app on it that you can record for an hour or 2 hours? Or?
Oh, yeah. So there's one that comes with it, which breaks
records
after
for about
a while.
Three seconds.
Yeah, called Voice Memo, so that's buggy. There's one called iTalk Lite, L-I-T-E, which is free, and you can record for hours and separate tracks and name them and download them.
So you can either get an iPhone or a Radio Shack recording device. Or both.
I use the...
Oh, wait. I'm sorry. I'll be right back. I forgot Cameron.
Yeah. Well, what I'm seeing in this as we're talking about this is that the voices, you know, the everyday, how did you call it, the habit person, the messages.
Just me.
Habiting around, those conditioned messages create a physical energy.
Yes, they do. Yes, and they
so,
most certainly do.
I mean, this is so. I think when I got the assignment for this, got your thing about it, I thought it was just the things, the practices that we do, but this whole bigger aspect of it, and that it can replace the habit me voices, I can see it creating a whole different physical energy.
Yes.
And that physical energy is so, it really makes a lot happen and not happen.
It's everything, isn't it?
It's just, it's like those messages are creating it.
Yes.
And maybe they are, after a while, they aren't even messages. It's just that energy that makes you feel that way.
Yes, on either side. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the energy on this side of listening to conditioned voices, creating your reality, creating the world that you live in, and the assumption, the belief is, it's just true, it's real, I'm having a real experience of what life is. No, I am having an experience of egocentric karmic conditioning creating a life for me.
Yeah, why does it feel so familiar?
That's right, because it's always been there.
But, you
and
know,
it's been refining in the reading, the endless refinements of...
So I'm having that same kind of woo-woo thing, that this is just where I was with a koan of exactly this. How do you change that energy? Because if you are... offering reassurances, practicing things within that paradigm, that energy is affecting it.
Which energy are we talking about?
I know it is getting confusing, isn't it?
Well, it's the light room and the dark room.
Yeah.
Okay, so when you're over here just habiting around, then you are being maintained.
Yes, maintained.
So you get too high, it brings you down. Get too low, it brings you up. Get too enthusiastic, dampens you. You get too depressed, it throws you a bone.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's maintaining you over here. Okay, you move into the light room, And you're also being maintained.
Yes.
But it's just a very different energy that is maintaining you.
Yeah. So the analogy I was seeing is a garden. So...
Interesting that you would have that.
So the soil...
That's where she works most of the time.
The soil is... I don't know too much about soil, how it's made up and stuff. I know PK and something. But so let's say, you know, you have all these flowers in the garden and they're all your sub-personalities, you know, and they're in the ground, in the soil. You planted them and then they're not doing so well and you want to take care of them, you know. So you do all these things. You talk nice to them, you trim the dead parts off and you take such lovely care. You water, you know, you may get something and add and so forth. But if the soil is not right, if you have those little things that are eating its roots,
if the seed falls on hard soil,
that's a religious thing. Yeah. And so, you know, that's kind of where the koan I've been working on. You know, that I'm taking care of these little flowers inside, and yet there's something, I'm just becoming really aware of this ground of being that just sort of eats it away.
Well, it's not the ground of being that's
eating
it away.
No, not the ground of being.
It's the layer of crap on top.
Fertilizer on the ground. Yeah, and so I've just been, you know, like, and then that was only just this past week where this is all just coming up as a koan. And then here's the answer. It's just like, I can't believe it. It's like, I can't.
It's a miracle.
It is a miracle.
Yes. Yes, it is. And, yes, and I think that you are going to find that this is the thing that's going to make the shift that you've been looking for.
I can see it. I mean, I can actually see how that would work. The thing is just to do it and to fill
all of your time and
all
energy.
All my time.
And the thing I was looking at today, I think it was today, is that what people get concerned about is, yeah, but what's going to happen to, you know, the stuff I have to do? And what, you know, I've got to think about projects and work and I've got to make, and you don't. Because no matter if you are in that conversation, this practice conversation, all of that clarity is available to you. Mm-hmm. It just pops right through.
Well,
it can't get through the dark.
Exactly.
But it's right there in the light, and it's completely available to you in every moment.
Yeah, and that's such a bogus argument, because if you're not listening to the light, you're listening to the dark.
Yes.
I mean, something's going on.
That's right. You're doing something.
Yeah.
You're doing something with your energy and attention and awareness.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. And to connect this to the retreat that we're on, just, you know, before you get ready to do something you're going to facilitate, have what you're going to listen to ready for you, what you're going to remind yourself of. What is facilitation? Why do I do it? And what am I there to offer others? What am I there to bring to myself? That it's selfless service. I'm here to be a mirror. It's not about me doing it right or wrong. And you just hear that mentor run you through the what you need to know and remember in order to do this, and then you go do that.
Somebody in our retreat actually said they have it recording like that. All right.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Very clever. Who are they? I keep an eye on them. I'm going to ask Renita.
I just had a technological response. The iPod, you download the quick voice to iPod and carry it around. And actually, I've been listening to the archives in the way that you're talking about this new practice tape, and I've had that very experience.
Yes. Yeah, a number of people actually tell us that that they just live in the radio show, and which is like being in group all day long.
And yet, I can do things like I come home. Yes. I don't feel like making dinner. I have the images low. Plug in the a show, and I've got energy, and I can still function and do it. And that's the conversation that's going on. So, but this, of course, is going to be. Ratchet that whole thing up.
Even more direct. Very good.
So, I don't know exactly how to say this, but I was looking at this today, and I've been working with the tape for a little while now, and I went back to do it again today. And I watched as kind of what came in was a very strong reaction to it, you know, really a kind of very typical physical, it was brought up physical reaction, a kind of an emotional reaction. And what was occurring to me as people were sharing this evening was, I guess the thing that's so special about it, and this maybe this is true for all of the practice opportunities we have, is that in that moment when conditioning gets rattled, regardless that I get identified with it, it's giving itself away.
Yes.
So you know, it's like, so I'm all in it, and I'm identified, and all whatever's breaking loose. But if I just kind of stay in it, if I could use an analogy for that, it's like being caught in like a big wave when you get thrown off or whatever, and it's just scrambled all over the place. But at one point, you come up above the water, and it just, it really feels like that in the sense that it gives itself away. So the big thing for what I was looking at today was conditioning came in, and I had made this list, and I was going to record it. It's overwhelming. See, this actually isn't going to work because this is just so overwhelming. You can't possibly be doing all these things. You know, this is just, you're just setting
it's
yourself
just
up.
It's too much.
It's too much. Just forget it. And I went off into the deep end, you know, or all the rest of it. But then, of course, as I was sitting here in group, or not of course, but as I was sitting here in group and listening to other people, what was coming to me was, aha, it gave itself away. That's it. That's the next thing to put on the tape.
Exactly. You just record that whole... So there you are listening to it, and you go, got it.
Yeah. That's right. So, overwhelming, and then I have that little thing to say, it is not me who is being overwhelmed.
Right.
It's conditioning who's feeling overwhelmed,
yes,
and therefore trying to foist it off on me.
And what I know from my experience is, no matter how I'm getting tumbled around, no matter how much sand I'm eating in a given moment, I will pop up above the water, and the sun's going to be shining up there, and I'll remember who I am. And
that's right. That's right. As evidenced quite literally from my experience of an hour ago, and now sitting here right now.
Yes.
There's the proof.
There's the proof.
It's right here.
And again, what conditioning wants to do is then, without a technique like this, just start. It wasn't quite like. Well, yeah, but it wasn't. You know, and if you. And why don't you look over there? And pretty soon it's gone.
Yeah. That's right.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
My experience today, when I started writing, it would just flow. It started with the coach in the morning. I just started going through the morning. And it was just really easy to write it. And then I stopped for the 3 o'clock meditation. And sitting here, I probably started in during working meditation, and I started getting sucked into conditioning. And I guess I just, I think all I want to say is that I know it's conditioning. I'm caught in it. And on some level, it's still fun.
Right. Yes. And recording all of that and listening to it will convince you even more of that. That it comes up, it catches you. This is how it catches me. It says this, it says that, it gets me to look at this, gets me to look at that. I go over there, I conclude that. I feel the energy sink. I believe that it's going to last forever. I hear the voice of the dead. And you get all of that down. And you listen to it, and it's going to get harder and harder for it to catch you because you can see so clearly what each little piece of it is.
So you just say into it, first it's going to tell you this.
Yep.
That's horse funky.
That's
then it's
right.
Going to tell you this.
Yep.
That is also... Just keep on.
Yep.
Okay.
And what I need to remember is, you know, you can say what it says, what it does, and then what do you need to remember? What do you come back to? What is true for you? What do you, you know, and just every step along the way, get it there as something that you can go over and over and over and over. And as David is saying, you know, then it adds something else, and you add that. And then it comes up with the next thing, and you add that. Until there's nowhere for it to go. It just, you know, it's said everything, it's done everything, you've recorded everything, you're listening to it, it's obvious who the winner is.
Yeah, Dan.
So this is, I have a lot of those pathways written down on process maps in drawers. So this takes it out and has my mentor go over it with me daily that information
exactly. Yeah. And think of the savings. People pay a lot of money for coaches. And you can hardly ever get a coach who will just talk to you whenever you want them to.
I thought you meant the post-it notes. But the coaches even more.
Yeah. This place has spent a fortune on post-it notes.
Well, it's sort of a detailed question because I can see myself. One of the processes I do is overwhelm, like we mentioned. And you said you listened to, several people said they listen to it every night or in the morning. I can imagine, for what I've already listed, that all the things we're mentioning, this could be really, really long. Do you listen to the whole thing?
I listen to it all the time.
Well, no, I can see that, but I can see it being so long that you listen to portions every...
Yeah, but here's the thing.
You're not talking about the whole thing.
Yeah, I listen to the whole thing all the time. Because what else are you going to be doing?
Right, no. Romita,
you know, you come home from work and you're going to fix dinner. Oh, that's a perfect time. You're riding in the car. That's a perfect time. You're getting ready for the day. That's a perfect time. I carry that little recorder. I just put it in the bathroom. You know, I turn it off when I blow dry my hair.
Yeah.
Which happens. Okay. And then I turn it back on again. I just take it from room to room with me, and there I am listening to it.
Well, I do that with the archives. I guess you know what I just got. I just wanted to know the right way to do it.
Of course, yeah. It's that's very important. And get that right up toward the top of your tape, okay?
Thank you.
Rebecca.
Well, this is so, you know, the test of a great idea is that it's in its simplicity, and it's just so powerfully simple, and I love it. And after this conversation and the readings, I just am wanting to express my gratitude for, I feel like we all are just so darn lucky to be on this path and in this room. And I just feel the need to express that. Like somehow I got on the bus. I don't know how or why, but boy, am I glad.
Yeah. Good bus to be on. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, the place that I'm eager to take this, so this would be a good time to ask you what I was going to ask you. And because I told people that I was going to tell people something and ask people something. So to tell people was this new practice. And what I want to do with this next is start having people use it at night. In the night when they wake up. Because there are just so many people who wake up in the night and they're awake for hours and miserable and, you know, insomnia is such a huge thing in our culture. I don't know if it is in every culture, but boy, in ours it is. And so to begin to train people that, you know, you have hours, if you're lucky, in the middle of the night where you can practice with this stuff. And I think it's going to be the end of insomnia. That's my current hope. But what I want to ask you, and what I want you to consider. How many of you do Facebook?
Do it means I have it.
Right. You have some relationship with Facebook. Because what I want to do, I mentioned this in one of the emails that I sent out, I want to do a practice thing where, and probably through Facebook, where there's a daily focus on practice, and there's a conversation that goes on so that we are practicing together in really small, it's kind of like a live Transform Your Life. Mm-hmm. Is what it would be like. Mm-hmm. And so I just want you to tell me if you, and you can tell me at whatever point, but if that's something that appeals to you, and what of that, how would that work to be helpful for you? Do you know what I'm asking?
Yeah, I could tell you something
right now. Okay.
Well, just as you mentioned, Transform Your Life. To me, that is like that, you know, the time when you, at Carmel or something, you get this, like, I'm exaggerating, 1 minute guidance, you know, literally 5 minutes, whatever it is. This is to me like every morning, just a one thing. A 1 minute, you know, or however long it takes to read it and write it and whatever I do with it. Guidance. And I see that the Facebook thing as the same thing, only portable. I mean, it'll be the, you know, it's on your computer, so it's there, and
you can do it at work.
You can do it anywhere.
It has a certain appeal.
Yeah, I mean, you could do it anywhere, and it can reach a huge amount of people. Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm really, you know, practice is my obsession, and I want to find a way to do exactly that, to introduce, you know, the whole turn your attention away from this, from whatever has you, mm-hmm. and even if it's just for a minute, convince yourself, realize, prove to yourself that you can come back here and be where you want to be. Mm-hmm. And so to bring that into people's lives so that they begin to have that, just even little of that, I don't have to be focused in this misery, I can come back to the present and have a different life experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's exciting that you would do that.
Okay, good. Yeah, thank you.
I think the idea of that kind of daily interaction is really exciting. What I need to know is there a way to be in Facebook where I don't end up with 9,000 friends?
Yes, there is. And one of the things that we're actually working on a lot now with the Africa Vulnerable Children's Project, it's on Facebook, and it's starting to, there are just so many exciting things. Those of you who don't have Facebook, you have to do it to follow that, if nothing else. Because have you told people that Teresa is now sending blogs?
Some people know. The update, people in this room are probably least informed, because I think the email just went out 2 days ago.
Uh-huh.
To the whole Sangha.
Yeah. So they're over there doing all of this amazing stuff and sending blogs back to us now, instead of us being over there talking about the amazing stuff that they're doing and sending blogs back, they're actually sending them back. And so we've got this whole thing where it's going to start going up on Facebook regularly. And I really would like, we talked a little bit about, you know, because not everybody in the room, but our Sangha, it's getting a little long in the tooth, you know, some segments of it. And so, you know, technology, maybe not right there. And to do some classes, to have Bob and some of the other folks do some classes that really walk people through. How do you do this so that it becomes... painless. Yeah. Because I was talking with Tina today, who's helping us with the Facebook thing, about the possibility of using Twitter to also get messages out to people to tune in and pay attention. So, you know, that fantasy I had, and we tracked this guy down. We were going to do this whole project of interacting with people, coaching all day long. Do you remember that? And it turned out that there was a program already in existence called iChange. And so we contacted that. We were so excited because he had this. He had done everything we wanted to do, but he's not doing anything with it. So there's this fabulous program to be mentoring people all day long. You know, where it's sending you messages and reminding you of your stuff and tracking and charting and all this, and, you know, it's not available to us. So just looking at some of the ways to use that technology to make practice more a part of people's everyday life. And so doing the training for Sangha that would enable us to catch up and make use of all of that.
I'm totally open to that. I'm just wondering, are there ways actually that you can restrict?
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah. Yes, there are. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you know, even Twitter.
Yeah. That was nice, Sherry. But what I really wanted to know.
That sounds great. But
yeah. But back to my original question, which was familiar to me as soon as you said it.
I just learned recently that also in Twitter, and she might have said this, you can have your own private account. I mean, you can have your own, just like in, well, even better than even in Facebook, you know, it's nobody else can get into it. I mean, you let people in. It doesn't have to be out there so that the whole world can see if you don't want it that way.
So anyway, I just want to hear from you. If there are other ideas that you have about how to make Sangha a more supportive, regular part of people's everyday life. Because I think that's so much what we're up against. You know, there are just these long stretches in people's days where the encouragement is to go unconscious. And so if we can start infiltrating that in some ways, I think it would be helpful. Anne?
Well, I really like the idea because I've only been on Facebook when I'm forced to because I have to get some information from somebody and that's the only place they put it, so I have to go on there. I do it reluctantly because it feels to me like most people use it like a video game. It's just a complete waste of time and distraction. So to actually take the technology and have a purpose to it that's helpful, I mean, it's kind of reclaiming the technology for good.
Yeah.
Taking it over from the dark side.
Yeah. Well, that's what Tina said today when I mentioned Twitter. I mean, she just went into, I don't like Twitter. I think Twitter is a really bad idea. And then I said, but, you know, it could be a really excellent way to get a message in your day that just brings you back to yourself and brings you back to practice. And so, and she said that was her take on it. Well, that'd be wonderful if somebody used it for a higher purpose.
Yeah, because it's like
spreading rumors.
What it's become, from my observation, it's become this huge distraction for people.
It will everything is right. I mean, sooner or later, everything is going. Have you ever noticed? Maybe it's just Google that does this. I don't know, but you know. I mean, meditation, the word meditation comes up in my emails on occasion. And, I mean, down this, it's just this bizarre list of meditation, anything having to do with meditation. So meditation now is as much of a smarmy, slimy, creepy, you know, how to make a buck. You know, coach you in the secret. And so, if we can turn some of that around and some of the stuff that people are kind of trapped in, the world that an awful lot of people are trapped in, can we use that trap to actually bring a little freedom in?
Yeah, the thing I was seeing when you were saying that is maybe what one thing that would be helpful, and kind of Penny said this, and I think it would be helpful for me in doing it on Facebook, to have guidelines about how this can be done in a way that it is not the norm of this is a distraction. How can you enter this technology in a way that you're not participating in the
crazy
vibration of it, or what the mass society is doing? Does that make sense?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So yeah.
And people have thought of that. It's possible. There are more people like us than we would think. Yeah. In fact, so many people who say, I did that for 20 minutes and I don't want to do that anymore. But, you know, within everything, it can be used for freedom or bondage.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm into taking the technology and using it for freedom.
Excellent. Michael.
So the best year yet, if you have an account, you can set up for it to send you automated email messages. So I get one every day of the week, which is some kind of reassurance or reminder. And I think you can set it up for days of the month if you want also.
Now see, I think this would be a really fun class for people to come up with and share all of the ideas like that. All of the things that are out there that we can use to support our practice. Wouldn't that be fun?
Yes.
All right. Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Was there anything on the subject of the retreat that you'd like to Tracy?
You know, it was so interesting. I think it was the first or second day of the retreat, you know, knowing that you weren't coming to the end of the week, and the schedule has been really spacious, probably the most spacious schedule that I've ever been on retreat. And it was interesting because my initial reaction was like, oh, my gosh, like, I want to come on this retreat to be a practice. Like, we should be just practicing the whole time, you know, nonstop. And then it was just like this, like, oh my gosh. I mean, they're being absolutely brilliant because the whatever relationship that I have with facilitation of myself is going to be how I'm going to be able to facilitate out there in the world. And then, you know, kind of leading into the radio show and, you know, what we call peace practices, which, you know, again, are kind of like little facilitation things, and then having this opportunity. And I think it's, you know, my karma is I love being a student, and it's always brings a lot of karma for me to go into the role of sharing. And I would say that it's been like a humbling retreat in that, really and truly, this relationship with this being is going to be completely, like my ability to be out there in this role is going to be completely contingent on how I am doing this one. So I just want to say that this week's been brilliant that way. And, you know, we always kind of get, I guess, what we need. And, there is a sense of, I don't know, like humility. Yeah, it's just been
kind of merged with shock and awe.
It's been really different, and I see, you know, how, like, you know, much it's set up out there, that, you know, that saying that we see all the time, we would do for others, but we never do for ourselves. I mean, to have this kind of spaciousness to explore so many of the techniques that people have been bringing up, and it's been something.
Yeah, you know, one of the things, and again, we mention this a lot, but when people come for, especially for There's Nothing Wrong With You, because it is such a focused retreat, what they say is, oh my God, those people were present for an entire week. That's what they get out of the facilitation. What they're doing is watching people be present hour after hour, day after day. They don't come out of it saying, wow, that exercise on... What they're stunned by is that it's possible to be present all the time. Okay? And so as facilitators, that's really the bottom line, most important thing. It's not our techniques. It's not, you know, it's not how well we do the techniques. It's not how, what we're doing is modeling practice. Not even being present all the time. In the beginning, it's much more being willing even than being present. Just showing up, being the most present we can be, doing the best job we can do with all the honesty and sincerity that we can muster. And that's what people will see. They'll see somebody practicing. And that's what will move them.
Should we replace sincerity with simplicity?
Yes. Good point. Lauren?
That, what you're just saying is really the experience that's coming up for me here, because on all the retreats I've ever been on, and I've been here just a couple of times, but I haven't been in a room full of people who are so dedicated to the practice consistently. It, you know, it's just kind of a mix of people who are new to the practice, and just, you know, blah, blah. This is like, I'm just really blown away. And I'm noticing how conditioning is wanting to say to me, well, you're like nowhere. You've been doing this for 20 years, and you thought you'd come somewhere, but no. I mean, it's just
only compared to that bunch of losers out there. You look pretty good. Now you're with the A-team.
So that's really, and just that, this experience of like being so dedicated to the practice is a huge inspiration to me.
Yes.
And all this stuff, I have to say I'm a little taken aback by the technology stuff, because it's email already. I'm just like, I can't even get to all the monastery emails. I mean, it's just like
nobody can. But if they can all think of them as support.
So each time, lots and lots of
each, you have a lot of support. Each time one of them comes in, you just take in the a message from practice. Don't get bogged down in the content.
I just think, God, there's so much going on. And I didn't even know how much is going on, because I come here, I'm like, wow, what are y'all doing? How have I missed all this? You know, like when you were talking today about these tapes and, I don't know, so many things, I kind of go, what? What's happening? How have I? And so I figure I need to come out to the monastery. It's such a deal. It's such a deal coming over here from the East Coast.
No, it's, I like to point this out. It's the same distance that we cover when we go there to see you. I swear to God, I know it doesn't seem like it, but it really actually is the same. We use the same airports and everything.
I just love being in this environment. It's so, it's just really, really good.
Yeah. And of course, that's what we're hoping for. That's what this, you know, that's what this is all about, mm-hmm. is getting to a place where this group of people, and blessedly, there are how many more who could be here?
Quite a few.
Yeah, probably almost this many again who could be here and would fit just as beautifully. Well, not space-wise, but spiritually, would fit just as beautifully in this group of people. Yeah. So it's really an amazing sangha that we have.
Yeah.
And beginning to really prioritize getting people who are practicing at this level together. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's wonderful to have everybody there and the people who just are getting started, but having people who are really committed and devoted to practice together, to practice together it's regularly is
so
powerful.
Concentrated. It just feels so dense and pure and fabulous. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm so thankful that you said today that if we're going into this kicking and screaming, that's the way to go, because that's how I feel. You know, I just think, oh gosh, I mean, it's like I want to do it and I don't want to do it and I can do it and I can't. So I just
Yeah, you're going to get it on the little recorder.
Yeah, all of it. Mm-hmm. This is really phenomenal for me to have this opportunity to learn mm-hmm. from everybody. Mm-hmm. And just to be see the modeling, it's very beautiful.
Yeah. And by the way, I thought about this earlier. You can tell Chris about this when you get home.
I can talk about
the tape, the recording, because he doesn't know about this yet, I don't think.
Unless, is that okay if I talk with him?
Yes, you train him in this.
Okay.
Yeah. Give him the lowdown. Get him started.
Okay, thanks.
Mm-hmm. Karen?
I love what you just said about modeling practice. And today it came to me why I want to just go, I just want to, being a beginner facilitator, I just want to do reflective listening, because I in the phone calls, I completely trust the adequacy of reflective listening. But for some reason, when I was in front of a group, I felt like I had to do more, or mm-hmm. that something more was needed. Mm-hmm. And I want to just until I am just so solid in front of a group, just reflective listening and trusting the adequacy of just reflective listening, it's like I don't want to venture out until I get that.
Does that make sense? I cannot tell you how wholeheartedly I support you mm-hmm. in that. I think that is the wisest position that anyone can ever take. Mm-hmm. So when people say to me, I've been meditating so long. Can I do something besides count the breath? And my response is, not until the thought of not counting the breath is so horrifying to you that that you live in just dread of the moment that somebody is going to give you a practice other than counting the breath. When you reach that point, you're getting close to being ready to let it go.
Well, we were talking about being trustworthy, and it's almost, to me, I'm not trustworthy, but the reflective listening is.
Yes.
And that's, I just saw that so clearly today.
Yes.
And that's, I just, and it's so comforting to know that I have that structure. And that's all I need to do. And it just takes everything else out of what it is that I might think I need to be or do or say. Or
all you are is a mirror.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You can show up and be a mirror. That's exactly right. There's all it did. Was it this? And what about this? And should I this? And God, I don't know. And maybe I should. It does. It all goes away, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. If you just reflect. Mm-hmm.
Anyway,
that's good. That's big. It's important.
For me, it was.
Yeah. Well, yeah. For everybody, it is. Mm-hmm. Everybody might not take it so to heart, but that doesn't mean it's not that important.
Mm-hmm. Well, I knew something in me really needed to come back, but I didn't know why. Mm-hmm. And then today, just
dropped in.
It dropped in. Mm-hmm. Yes, thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, what do you want, Catherine?
I had a question about making the R shapes. Is that okay to say? Mm-hmm. When we were talking, and I was saying, conditioning will tell me something, and I put in my tape recorder, it's going to tell you this, and don't believe that. And you said, and I'm sorry, it's just, I've lost it. You, to say what I do know?
Yes. So it's kind of what Michael was saying. The conditioning says this, and that's a lie. What's really true is da 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 da. And then it's going to come at me with blah blah blah. Okay. And it's going to try to convince me that da 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 da.
Okay.
And that's not true. Because what's really true is. Mm. So if that's, you know, that'll be a piece of your recording. There'll be a ton of other things, you know. I want to live in the world like my dog. I want to, you know, whatever it is. So there will be lots of things on there. But in that very direct kind of coaching way, that's what you're going to be doing, is pointing out what it's doing and then putting in what you know to be true for you.
Okay. And conditioning is telling me you're not going to know what's true.
Of course it is. And so, yeah, conditioning is going to tell me that I'm not going to know. This is such a weapon against that system because it's just not used to you recording it and listening to, that's it. So for a while you might get quite a bit of silence, which will be refreshing. And what you want to do, of course, is record the fact that that's probably going to go on. In other words, I want to remember that when I'm really closing in on something, mm-hmm. the voices are going to shut down and get very quiet mm-hmm. and try to outwit me. Mm-hmm. Okay? So a week later, when you hear yourself mm-hmm. say that, mm-hmm. you recognize, yeah, and actually, they're back. Mm-hmm. And they're talking to me about whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Wow. Mm-hmm. And now, this is me, so you'll just have to see for you. But I watch how the voices try to orchestrate, so it'll be, I'm not really sure that that's an issue in my life anymore. Well, let's give it 6 months and see if it's really not. So any kind of information that comes in about how, this is probably not important, okay, because if it made it on there, it's probably yours and worth keeping. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so 6 months, 5 years from now, if it's really history, just listen to it for old time's sake.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, folks.
Thank you.